In today's edition of our collective nightmare, we find ourselves grappling with the grimly familiar tale of international aid, or rather, the lack thereof. In northeastern Nigeria, a mother named Yegana Usman stands in the shadow of six tiny graves. Six out of her 13 children have been claimed by malnutrition, a tragedy directly linked to decisions made thousands of miles away in Washington, D.C., where humanitarian aid is treated like an optional subscription service. Just last year, a U.S.-funded nutrition program was abruptly halted, cutting off lifelines for families like Usman's. Because when it comes to saving lives overseas, we prefer our wallets tightly zipped and our empathy on mute. The Trump administration's freeze on foreign aid has turned into a death sentence for countless children under five suffering from acute malnutrition, not just in Nigeria but across Africa. But hey, America first means everybody else last, right? The World Food Program and UNICEF have raised alarms about dwindling resources. They might as well be shouting into the void. Instead of addressing these cries for help, we're busy patting ourselves on the back for being the most generous nation in the world. Generous? Sure. If you consider throwing crumbs while hoarding loaves as benevolent charity. Meanwhile, Mercy Corps had to shutter 42 programs that could have reached over 3 million people worldwide. Because apparently life-saving interventions are now considered expendable luxuries. And yet, somehow there's always enough money for another fighter jet or tax break for billionaires. Usman's surviving twin clings to life with whatever scraps of aid trickle through bureaucratic red tape and political posturing. As funding cuts loom again this October, Usman, and millions, like her, are left wondering if their remaining children will survive another month. It's important to remember, foreign aid is less than 1% of America's budget. A drop in an ocean of military spending and corporate subsidies. But even that seems too much when weighed against America First priorities that equate prosperity with isolationism. So here we are, a world where mothers bury their babies due to policy decisions made continents away. A world where survival hinges not on need, but on geopolitical whims. We've become experts at looking away while congratulating ourselves for doing what little we do. And thus continues our collective nightmare. A surreal dance between despair and absurdity played out on an indifferent global stage.
At the H-1B visa, it's like the golden ticket of immigration, except instead of a chocolate factory, you get to work at Google. And now President Trump has decided that this golden ticket should cost $100,000, because nothing says we value skilled workers quite like slapping them with a price tag that could buy a small house in Ohio. Let's break this down. The administration claims this hefty fee will ensure only the best and brightest come to America. Right, because every genius software engineer from Bangalore is just itching to pay six figures for the privilege of working 80-hour weeks in Silicon Valley. Forget about student loans, now you can have visa loans. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick suggests companies need to decide if their foreign talent is worth the extra cash or if they should just hire an American instead. Because clearly, there's an untapped pool of unemployed. Computer scientists sitting around waiting for Amazon to call them up, probably while sipping artisanal coffee and debating which streaming service has the best original content. And let's not forget about those tech giants, Amazon, Google, Meta. They're all crying into their piles of money over how this might affect their hiring practices. I mean, how will they survive with only $11 trillion in market capitalization between them? Maybe they'll finally have to start offering free lunch and dinner at work. But don't worry, it's not all doom and gloom. Recent college grads might actually benefit from this policy change. Yes, fresh out of university with a degree in computer science and a minor in debt management, they're ready to fill those entry-level positions that are suddenly too expensive for foreign workers. It's like winning the lottery, but without any actual money involved. Of course, businesses are already plotting how to shift operations abroad where talent isn't as pricey. So while we're busy making America great again by keeping out skilled workers, Canada and India are rolling out red carpets for them. In conclusion, if you're planning on coming to America on an H-1B visa anytime soon, bring your resume and maybe a checkbook too.
Ah. The sweet scent of democracy in action. Tom Homan, a man who once graced our television screens as the stern face of immigration enforcement, has now stepped into his new role as President Trump's border czar, but not without a little side hustle, it seems. Picture this, a bag stuffed with $50,000 cash from your local fast casual chain kava, because nothing says business transaction like tzatziki and bribery. In what can only be described as an FBI sting operation gone awry, or perhaps exactly as expected, Homan was caught on tape accepting this generous gift from undercover agents posing as businessmen. The goal? Securing government contracts in Trump's second term. Who could have guessed that such altruism would go unpunished? But fear not, dear citizens. The Department of Justice swooped in to save the day by closing the case faster than you can say second term. It turns out proving someone agreed to specific acts for cash is harder than finding a needle in a haystack, especially when said person wasn't technically holding office at the time. A convenient technicality, if there ever was one. FBI Director Kash Patel and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche assured us all that resources must focus on real threats. Because clearly, bags of money exchanged for political favors are just figments of our overactive imaginations. Meanwhile, White House spokesperson Abigail Jackson denounced this investigation as nothing more than political theater, a distraction from the true menace, those pesky immigrants apparently flooding our borders unchecked. As Homan continues his crusade against immigration with renewed vigor, having been vindicated by our justice system's impeccable standards, we're left to marvel at how seamlessly public service and private enterprise can intertwine when nobody's really watching too closely. And so we march onward through this brave new world where accountability is optional and irony reigns supreme.
Welcome to the Existential Crisis Hour, where we ponder the grand absurdity of life, one celestial event at a time. Today, we're inspired by an article from CNN titled Fall Equinox: Why the First Day of Fall Isn't as Equal as You Might Think. It turns out that even our planet's attempts at equality are as flawed as our own. The equinox, a biannual cosmic balancing act where day and night shake hands for a brief moment before going back to their usual lopsided arrangement. It's like Mother Nature's way of saying, look, I can be fair, sort of, but here's the kicker. It's not really equal at all. Thanks to atmospheric refraction and other scientific mumbo-jumbo, daylight gets a few extra minutes on its tab. So much for equality. Turns out even the universe has its favorites. Imagine explaining this to ancient civilizations who built entire monuments around these celestial events. Stonehenge was supposed to mark these occasions with precision. Instead, it's just another reminder that perfection is unattainable, even when you're aligning giant rocks. And while we're on it, let's consider how we've marked this so-called balance with festivals and rituals across cultures. From mooncakes in China to druids doing their thing in London, it's all about celebrating something that doesn't quite exist as we thought it did. But isn't that just life? We celebrate what could be rather than what is. Meanwhile, those living near the poles experience more dramatic shifts between light and dark throughout the year, almost like they're living in some cosmic reality show where each season brings new plot twists and lighting design. So next time you find yourself pondering your place under the sun, or lack thereof, remember this: even when nature tries its hardest to give us equilibrium, it still falls short. Perhaps there's comfort in knowing we're not alone in our imperfection. After all, if Earth can't get it right every 6 months, why should we? As you sip your pumpkin spice latte or whatever seasonal cliche suits your fancy today, just know that somewhere up there beyond our comprehension lies an indifferent universe laughing quietly at us, trying desperately to make sense out of chaos through calendars and clocks ticking away into oblivion. Until next time on the Existential Crisis Hour, keep questioning everything, because nothing is ever quite what it seems, especially not those pesky equinoxes pretending they're balanced when they're anything but.
In the capitalist fever dream, philanthropy is merely another cog in the grand machine of profit, a spectacle wrapped in benevolence that masks the relentless pursuit of capital. Farm Aid, born from a fleeting moment of rockstar empathy, stands as a testament to this twisted reality. It was 1985 when Bob Dylan, with an offhand remark at Live Aid, inadvertently sparked a movement to save America's family farms. Farms being crushed under the weight of their own mortgages and the banks' insatiable appetite for foreclosure. The irony is palpable. Celebrity voices raised millions, while farmers, those stewards of sustenance, were left dangling over financial ruin. The concert stage became a pulpit for protest and patriotism alike, yet behind the curtain, the systemic rot festered unchecked. Willie Nelson and his cadre of musical saviors may have raised $20 million in one day, a drop in the ocean compared to Wall Street's daily churn, but what did it change? The same fields lay fallow under corporate control, only now they had a soundtrack. Decades later, we find ourselves no closer to salvation. Climate change ravages crops with merciless precision while politicians engage in performative hand-wringing. The Agriculture Resilience Act dangles like a carrot before Congress, another legislative mirage promising redemption but delivering little more than bureaucratic inertia. Corporations continue their death grip on power, squeezing small farmers until they bleed dry or sell out. Subsidies flow freely to those who grow corn and soybeans by the acre, while purveyors of fresh produce, the very essence of nourishment, are left to fend for themselves amidst market volatility and policy indifference. And what becomes of these charitable endeavors when set against such staggering odds? Farm Aid persists as an annual ritual, a nostalgic nod to grassroots activism. But its impact is dwarfed by an agribusiness leviathan that devours everything in its path. In this capitalist dystopia, even altruism must turn a profit or perish. As Willie Nelson pens hopeful missives from his blog at 92 years old, one cannot help but wonder if we're all just characters in some grotesque farce, where human decency is commodified and sold back to us as entertainment. For every dollar raised in charity concerts or road races lies another reminder that real change will never come from those invested in maintaining status quo chaos. This is capitalism's fever dream, a world where good intentions are co-opted into marketing campaigns and genuine solutions remain forever out of reach, replaced instead by endless cycles of exploitation masked as progress.